Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
I'm 43 years old. I'm not sure I could do this any longer. I don't think I can do it anymore. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, so I happen to be 21 years older than you, and I have lived this life, and I'm like you. I'm like flabbergasted, but also not surprised. I'm not surprised by the gutless Mets. Are you surprised by them?
No, I'm not,
especially after the last 3.5 months.
No. I'm not saying it's not about being surprised. It's just that I think, you know, it's funny because I forget who said it in the postgame. Maybe it was Todd Zeal or maybe it was Blevins. I don't know. As I'm sitting there watching this, just digesting more and more of this nonsense. But it was almost like, or maybe even Ronnie said, who cares? Doesn't matter. So they say, it felt like these guys never thought this day would come where we still had runway. They still had games. They still could figure it out. And I think that's the way I was, too. I was like, they'll figure it out. Something will happen, and they'll make it into the postseason. And it never did. So, of course, I'm not surprised because it's been terrible for so long. But it doesn't make it any easier, the fact that this is something that – two things that happened this weekend that we'll never forget. We'll never forget. And it's all negative. So, like, this 2025 season – is now in the pantheon of all the horrible things. So when we look back and we say, oh, remember 2007, remember 2008, now remember 2025? It's going to be part of it. And then Bethpage Black has now turned into the place on Long Island that used to be such a cool place. Now everybody that goes there is going to be like, oh, yeah, this is the place where people were throwing drinks at Roy McIlroy's wife and the Europeans came in here and pooped down the U.S. team's neck. So I got to deal with that, not just today, but for the rest of my life, because these things will linger. That's how bad it was.
Well, two things I got to say that you actually foresaw both of those things. One, the Mets, and the other was the actions of the golf fans at Bethpage. You were all over both of them. I mean, you probably a month ago, I think, said you're done with the Mets. The Mets are not going to win. They're not going anywhere. This team has got no heart. You said all of that. I kind of agree with you, but that was the day that I told you, you got to believe. You got to believe. And I saw a lot of you got to believes down in Miami, because it was like three Met home games down in Miami. It wasn't even like they were on the road. There were 90% of the fans there were Met fans. And what did they do? They totally disappointed the Met fan in person. And it to have it end in a double play the way that it ended, or, you know, how many guys stood up there and just watched pitches go across the plate for strikes. Look, part of this is Carlos Mendoza's a fault, because, you know, he has been saying for 3 months, we got the talent. The talent's in there. We got a very talented team. The talent's in there. And, you know, he did come after the game was over yesterday. He did say that it's on me. I'm the manager. And, you know, he kept saying the same thing over and over and over for 3 months, and nothing ever changed. They had 7-game losing streaks. They lost their pitchers. Even when they brought young pitchers up that gave a little juice to the team, they couldn't hit in key spots. They couldn't come through in key spots. You know, I don't know how many times, whether it be Francisco Alvarez, Jeff McNeil, Brandon Nimmo, Pete Alonso,
Juan Soto in this game.
I mean, it was just over and over and over again. And look, to me, last year they were a team. They came together as a team, and maybe it was a lot to do with the oh my god, the grimace, whatever it was. But it was a very likable team. It came together. This team that has $425 million invested into it. And how do I come up with that number? Well, that's the payroll plus the amount of luxury tax that Steve Cohen has to pay for this team. He paid essentially almost $500 million to have this team. The fans showed up. The players did not. I'm sorry. And he probably made it, and he and David Stearns probably made it great for these players, whether they give Juan Soto a box or $765 million or, you know, probably first-class travel, probably took care of the locker rooms, made everything super easy for these players. And this is how they turned around and rewarded him. So David Stearns is going to talk to the media today. I don't normally sit here and start screaming about firing coaches, except when it comes to the Rangers. And I can tell when the Rangers quit on their coach like they did last year. This team never listened to their manager. I don't care how nice a guy he is. I don't care how great he is. They have to get somebody in here who actually has some, you know, red ass in them to get whoever is going to be still here playing at a level that is expected of them. And I would imagine that they're going to move away from Jeff McNeil. I would imagine they're going to move away from Pete Alonso. I would imagine there's going to be a number of guys on that pitching staff that are not going to be back here next year because the younger players are going to take their spot. And I'm just going to tell you that when David Stearns meet the media today, we're going to find out a lot about, you know, these disastrous moves at the trade deadline, which we thought were going to make a difference. They did not make a difference. This team just had a losing DNA all year long. Well, I wouldn't say all year long, but from the middle of June on, something happened with this team where they just thought they could mail it in, where they had all the talent in the world. They had Juan Soto. They had Francisco Lindor. They had Pete Alonso. You know, they had all these guys. They had Sean Manaea. These guys were going to be great. David Peterson was going to be great. You know what? They all failed, except maybe for Clay Holmes on Saturday.
Yeah, which is unbelievable, the eerie similarities from the 07, 08, and 25, where game 161, they're unbelievable. They get an unbelievable pitching performance. In game 161, they shut out a team, and then game 162, they come back and they choke. Well, it's unbelievable.
They didn't have pitchers. They had, you know, everybody was available, you know, yesterday. You know, here's the other thing. So the Dodgers spent, you know, when you take into account tax, probably $515 to $20 million. So they're over $500 million invested in their team. The Mets almost have $500 million invested in their team. You know who the lowest payroll in the majors is? It's the Miami Marlins.
Yeah.
The lowest payroll.
Mm-hmm.
You bought crap is what you bought. You bought a total loser mentality. And I'm sure each one of these players don't feel that way. But when I attach the amount of money to what they're making, to what they put forth this year, it is the worst sporting disappointment in the history of professional sports because of the amount of money that is invested and because the Mets set an attendance record top of it.
Oh, they embarrassed their fan base. I mean, everybody was there for them. Everybody bought into this team from the second that the Juan Soto signing was happening. The Met fan was there, supported, was getting in the face of everybody else and was just emboldened by everything that was going on. Everything that Steve Cohen was trying to build was right there. And then these players completely flushed it down the toilet. So, yeah, just quickly, because it's just amazing to me. 2007, game 161, Mets 13, Marlins 0. 2008, Mets 2, Marlins 0. 2025, Mets 5, Marlins 0. And then the next day, they lost each one of those games and then failed to make the postseason. So,
to the lowest payroll in Major League Baseball.
I mean, just think about this scene. You know, think about that. You know what's...
And by the way, I'm sorry, G, 90% of the fans at the Marlins Stadium this weekend were Met fans.
Of course.
Rooting the Mets on.
Yeah, which is amazing because of how bad they have been.
You know what reminded me of Rory McIlroy on Saturday and Sunday. It really did. It reminded me of if there was a Miami Marlin fan there and you're a Miami Marlin player, nothing sweeter if you're not going to make the playoffs than to knock the $425 million Mets out of the playoffs.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was definitely sweet. I think it was much more sweeter for Rory than it was the Marlins and their fans in a season where they ultimately didn't do anything either, where Rory, of course, has another opportunity to hoist the Ryder Cup. But anyway, you know, I had to question, and I was watching them, you know, clean up their stuff and listen to them after the game. Like, I had to question, how much did it hurt some of those guys? And now, I'm not saying all of them, but some of them. Like, was there a sense of relief with some of these guys that it was over and they didn't have to answer any questions about this? Or were there some of them in there that, I mean, definitely a guy like Brandon Nimmo, I know it makes him absolutely ill what happened. There's few guys in there who will never question their passion. But there's some other guys I'm just looking at. I'm like, I wonder if this even means a thing to them right now.
Can you tell me who the guy is? And I can probably sit here and say, you know what? I agree with you or disagree with you.
Is Juan Soto happy that the season's over? Honestly, all the money he made, the regular season, can't blame me. I had a historic season answering all these questions. Now, I know people will be like, oh, well, you left the Yankees and the Yankees are in the playoffs and now you're a Met and blah, blah. Do you think he really cares about that?
I do. I have to say I do.
Okay.
For him and Lindor, I believe.
Oh, Lindor has no way. I 100% believe that he's
bothered by this. They are just absolutely befuddled and besides themselves. And unfortunately, he hits in a double play to lose the game and end the season on that note is really just awful. You know, we'll hear about it next year when they come back to spring training. You know, last year was an awful season, bad memories. We had to flush them down, you know, and also you're going to hear all that crap. I mean, you know, interestingly enough, you know, David Stearns didn't sign all these guys. He did sign a bunch of them, but didn't sign all of them. Some of them were here he inherited that he's going to have to get rid of. He's just going to have to get rid of because whatever it is, I don't know, last year the team came together, and you know, and when Julio Iglesias was here, Jose Iglesias was here with the Padres about a week ago, and he talked about the team, like that last year's team compared to this year's team. Now, obviously, he's not on this year's team, but by the way, he's going to the playoffs again because he's a very likable player. And I understand that the Mets wanted to get some younger players in the lineup, and that's more of a David Stearns and baseball ops decision than it is an ownership decision. Because I believe if you ask the owners, they probably would have wanted him back because you know they gave him the OMG necklace and. Mm-hmm. They treated him like gold, and unfortunately, they didn't want to bring him back because they wanted to play the younger guys, which I think all of us understand the team's got to get younger, and they have to play younger players. But we also understand that when you watch these younger players, you realize that some are just not ready for prime time yet, whether it be in the field or in the batter's box. And I swear to God, if Ronnie Mauricio is up at bat another time in the eighth inning with the chance to win the game or tie the game, it seemed like the last couple of weeks, it always found that spot seemed to find him a lot.
Yeah. I mean, the defense totally collapsed with the team in the last few weeks, actually months. Obviously, we know what happened with the pitching, and it was a domino effect. The offense was so unbelievably inconsistent, and that's really what it was that made us not believe was that if it wasn't one thing, it was the other. And now what I'm really curious about is how far away does David Stearns get from the philosophy that has built these winning teams he's had in the past, that has gotten him this job, which has made everybody say he's boy genius, all of these things. I mean, does he do the same thing with the starting rotation and not invest money into it like to see him do?
He may not have to because he has two guys, I think, that they're going to pencil in as starters at least next year. I don't think Jonas Hong is going to be here yet.
That's two. They used 40-some-odd goddamn pitchers
this year.
Well,
they had a lot of injuries. There's no question about that. But you know, his trade deadline deals didn't work out either.
Yeah.
You know, and when Tyrone Taylor came back, he actually was the best center fielder we had all season long. And he was the one that they were trying to replace because he was the ultimate, you know, the hole in the lineup was center field.
And I can't blame him for the Helsley deal. I can't. I mean, everybody lauded that deal. He came here and he was awful. I mean, I don't, and that's where it's like, okay, is that Jeremy Hefner? Is that Carlos Mendoza? I'm not sure. But I did see that Andy Martino put out yesterday that Carlos Mendoza is safe. There is no intention that Steve Cohen and David Stearns want to move on from Carlos Mendoza. I just, my question is,
what?
Can you come back from something like this?
My point is like, you know, he's a nice guy. We both like him, but man, this obviously over and over. And again, these managers talk too much. They have to talk too much. And I've said this since I've taken this radio station and this job. I basically have said that they talk way too much. You should talk maybe twice a week as opposed to twice a day. And the reoccurring theme from him was, well, we got the talent. I mean, I want to know what kind of conversations are you having with that talent to get the most out of that talent. And I guess when you look at the numbers for Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor and Juan Soto, you could sit there offensively and say, well, you know, overall the numbers are great.
Yeah. But what does it mean?
What does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. I mean, if the numbers, if it doesn't happen when it's supposed to happen, when it needs to happen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time. Somehow, some way, the New York Mets are not playing postseason baseball in 2025, despite dedicating close to $500 million to a baseball team and Steve Cohen, the owner, going all in after what was a great season last year. It's an expanded playoff. They had every opportunity in the world over the last 3.5 months to get it done, and they didn't. And they have the Cincinnati Reds, who need to lose, losing, and they get shut out. They didn't earn it. They didn't deserve it. There was something rotten with this team. I don't know what it was. There has been zero reporting on it from inside that clubhouse. I mean, it felt like, you know, when it's the Jets, there's always something. Like, somebody's got some nugget of this thing or that thing. I haven't heard a single thing about, like, any sort of issues within that clubhouse that led to this weird season, the direct opposite of last year, where everybody loved one another and they played for each other. And then this year, there's just some sort of sourness with this group the entire year. I mean, you said it before, you don't know if they like each other or not. I'm not sure either. But one thing is for sure, that this is the result of what happened this year. This cannot be a cosmetic offseason. There has to be a real deep look into what the hell happened, and you got to rebuild the foundation of this team and the core of this team, because any team that does that, that's getting paid that, doesn't deserve to come back with 75% of who they were. Maybe not even 50% of who they were. It's got to be that serious.
It's as big a disaster, financial disaster, I guess. Because Steve Cohen ended up, you know, breaking records with attendance, you know, it's not so bad, because, you know, the money he put in basically came back to him through ticket sales and things of that nature. And we're going to find out tomorrow whether or not he's going to get one of these downstate three licenses.
Yeah.
But I still look at the amount of money he spent, what this team did, and how it wilted itself all the way to the end, and the 3.5 months to get us to this point.
Yeah. That's the thing about it.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, it was death by a thousand paper cuts. It felt like this was going on forever. I mean, they had been a bad baseball team for a long time. So as disappointing as it is, I mean, right before we went on our last vacation, I had essentially given up on them at that point, thinking they weren't going to, at least, I mean, if they made the playoffs, they were not getting back to the NLCS. But it's just like we were watching this go on. Like, it was like we were watching them get flushed down the toilet for 3.5 months.
Two things really that jumped out to me. Obviously, the starting pitchers that started the season in the rotation. You remember how much we always talk about coming out of spring training, oh, the five guys in the rotation, who's going to make it, who's not going to make it, who's going to get sent down, who's going to the bullpen. And everybody makes a big deal out of that. And rightfully so, it's nice to make the opening day roster. But we all know that there's going to be probably 14 or 15 starting pitchers at some point during the season. And for the Mets, you know, their starting pitching basically hit the wall, whether it be the floating bone chips in the elbow of Sean Manaea, whether it be Montas, whether, you know, you name it. You could talk about every single one of those guys. And Clay Holmes gave you a great performance on Saturday, which was unexpected, but was desperately needed.
Yeah.
But then you think about, okay, that's the pitching staff. That fell apart. But then you had a nice group of young kids that came up here that gave the team a little bit of a shot in the arm, led by Nolan McClain. That was good. But then all of a sudden, like, the trades that that David Sturges made at the trade deadline, we thought Cedric Mullins was going to become something. He was nothing. He never became anything. I don't know. He was totally unhappy here, it looked like.
Yeah.
And then Helsley was another one where they said, okay, we finally got our setup guy, and we can use our other guys in other different spots and other high level. You know, Ryan Stenick ended up being overused. I felt like
a lot of these guys were. I mean,
that guy would take the baseball on any day. I give him credit because I think he's a warrior, but I also know that he also has had his moments where he just basically flat out stunk.
Yeah, I mean, it's a domino effect with the pitchers. You can't get out of the fourth inning, then you go to the bullpen, and then those guys get overused. I mean, the only guy in the bullpen that didn't get overused was Edwin Diaz because Mets didn't have enough leads in the ninth inning. And this is also, you want to talk about something wrong with a team and lacking fight? I mean, Gary, Keith, and Ron were talking about it. I mean, they had not come back in a ninth inning the entire season. I mean, how many comebacks did we see last year? The Mets never came back.
You would think, you were hoping that it was going to be, the first one was going to be yesterday.
Yeah, and no. You know, you get one guy on, then you get a fly out, and then you get a double play. It's like, okay, and season over. Oh, let's go to Anthony in Bridgewater, New Jersey. What's going on, Anthony?
What's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call. I am so annoyed today with this Mets season. I can have my own show with you guys for like 4 hours if you let me, but to me, this comes down to one thing. And you can talk about the players. You can talk about this. Yeah, they suck. Sturges was terrible this year. From the last offseason, messing with Alonso, almost not even getting him back. He had Soto because he had Cohen's money. He was 0-30 on everything he did. And what drives me even more crazy, they were trending down so bad by the All-Star break, and he bet on the bullpen, not the starters. And the starting rotation was terrible then, and it got even worse in August and September. Everything he did this year was wrong. If there's one guy who should take the hit, and he won't because, you know, Cohen thinks he's the prophet of, like, Jesus, it should be Sturges. It starts with him and ends with him. It's his roster. It was his input on the team. He didn't bring back Iglesias. He didn't have, like, a guy like Martinez in the clubhouse, which obviously they needed. It was an epic failure by him. And he better not come out today at 3:30 and, like, have his little smirky smile, like, that he knows everything more, because he was terrible.
Anthony, how many of these moves, though, just to be fair, and I know the results are the results, but how many of these moves, when they happened, did you think were going to be terrible? I can give you one. I mean, the Frankie Montas one, I don't think anybody liked that deal. I think even Frankie Montas was surprised he got that contract. But some of these other ones, like, I'll be honest with you, the trade deadline, I wanted to get a center fielder that could give us a little more offense, and I wanted to get bullpen help. He made those deals. I thought they were perfect, but those guys just were terrible.
Yeah, but to me, Gio, that's his responsibility. And when it doesn't work, it's his fault. I mean, I didn't like the Mullins one. I didn't think it was much more of an upgrade over Taylor. I mean, I thought Bader was better. And again, you can kind of hit or miss on those guys. But to me, overall, he did nothing to get the starting pitching rotation better. He believes in this Hefner thing where they're the baseball. I don't want to hear ever again about this pitching lab. The pitching lab is shut down. It's never opened again with this group. They need real pitcher. They need a starting pitcher to go with those guys next year. Not like a retread guy that's been there forever that can try. No, they need a real pitcher like Dylan Cease that can actually pitch, and you know what you're going to get from
him. And here's the other thing. I mean, last year, all of that stuff worked. I mean, I thought that the rotation going into last year was horrendous on paper, and you had two out of the three best pitchers in the National League on that staff, and you had... You know, this year I trusted him because of what happened last year, and all of it failed.
And so, a lot of guys got hurt, though. Again, you know, I'm not saying Tyler McGill was a Cy Young Award winner, but he got hurt. Griffin Canning got hurt. They bring up Sproat and they bring up McClain. We got something there with those two guys. There's no question about it. And maybe Jonah Tong, another year in the minors, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, because he looks like he belongs in Little League, just looking at his face. I'm just like, okay. And you know, and he's got to learn. And it's, but I will say those young guys did give the team a shot in the arm where they really needed it and when they needed it, especially Nolan McLean. But again, you know, the defense. How many times have we been talking about bad baseball, like in the field? I feel like I'm talking about this till I'm blue in the face, and it goes all the way back 10 years to that series against the Kansas City Royals in the World Series.
Yeah.
I mean, I swear to God, the amount of mistakes that they make on the base paths or in the field were alarming. And to me, that goes back whether you want to talk about the pitching lab and the pitchers, you want to talk about the manager and his decision-making. Ultimately, the players got to be held accountable about how they play the field.
Let's go to Mark, who's in Connecticut. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, man.
Thanks for taking my call. I completely agree with the last caller that they got to get a starting pitcher. But if you listen to the post-game interview with Pete Alonso yesterday, forget the woman's name who interviewed him. They asked him if he thought he'd be back, and he said, I hope that they do have me back. And they were asking about the vibe in the locker room, and his words were, yeah, there's some good guys in the locker room. You could tell that there are issues within those four walls. He made it seem. If you play it back, you'll hear it yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him with Steve Gelbs and the other assembled media, and I listened to that whole thing. And if you listen to Pete Alonso throughout the years, I mean, he's just like stream of consciousness, just saying whatever. Like, I don't even, like, I can't take anything, look into anything he says and read between the lines because I don't think that he's that type of person. Like, I think he just says.
Yeah, but when you say there's some guys in the locker room that are good guys.
I'll listen to it. Listen, Mark, I'll trust
you. It's either some or all. Or none.
I'll go back and listen to it myself.
It's the opposite of what Aaron Judge said about his team yesterday. Now, it's easy to sit there.
It's all.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, Aaron Judge's team is winning. And they're on a winning streak, and they finish the season strong. He finished the season strong, and, you know, Ben Rice hits a home run or two home runs, and they end up winning. I mean, it's easy to sit there and say, yeah, man, I love this team. I love these guys because we're winning. Winning cures all ills. Losing and going on losing streaks and not living up to your potential, unfortunately for the New York Mets, leaves you wondering what is going on with the team, what's going on internally. And then you take what Pete said yesterday after the game, if in fact that was accurate, and you understand that losing does that to teams.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to hear it because I listened to his entire post-game press conference with the media there, and I don't know. I did not detect any of that from him, but I'll try to find whatever Mark was talking about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Come on, you know how bad it has to get for them to actually miss the postseason? Think about it. They missed the postseason with 83 wins. Had they won 80 on a tiebreaker, had they won 84 games, they'd be in the postseason. So then I did get off the ship doing the math with 10 games to go. Either way, whether you want to term it a collapse or the worst team money could buy or the second worst team money could buy, for me, BT, it is after the offseason, after the hope, the excitement, the new direction, the expanded postseason, the way that they started the year, it is unquestionably, in my mind, the most embarrassing season that the New York Mets have ever had.
It's got to be the most stunning disintegration of any New York sports team I've ever seen. Now, there's been other collapses, some with the Mets, some with other teams as well, but the fluctuation from the high points where the Mets looked at points like the best team in baseball to the inability to score a run. yesterday against the Marlins when the Reds lose. Like, we're going to tell this story 15, 20, 30 years from now, and if you didn't live through it, I don't know that you're going to really believe it. It's unacceptable. It's horrible for Met fans. Met fans have been amazing this year. Met fans are always amazing, but particularly going out and following this team and supporting this team and giving the money to the team like Cohen implored you to do. You did your job. Steve Cohen did his job. Not enough people did their job. What an absolute mess.
And think about it this way, like, we'll get to, well, what needs to happen and what you would do. Nobody has any answers as to why this happened. It's not just, well, the starting pitching fell apart. Yeah, that's a big part of it, but that's not the singular reason. They couldn't hit with runners in scoring position all year long. Obviously, this last weekend, like, yesterday, I was like, oh, man, how are they going to get through this game with Manaea especially? It wasn't the problem. They didn't score a run. They didn't score. Big Ben, Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Nimmo, McNeil, get him out. Get McNeil out. I'm tired of watching Jeff McNeil. All of them. So it's not just the pitching. Like, obviously the pitching is bad. The bullpen is bad. Stearns, to me, is the main culprit. We can break it down. Mm-hmm. But even in just one weekend where all you had to do is take 2 out of 3 from the Marlins, or go back to last weekend, all you had to do is take 2 out of 3 against the lowly Washington Nationals. And you couldn't even do that. So it's not just, well, it's the pitching, well, it's this, well, it's that. They had these guys stay healthy and all have career years, and they still couldn't beat the Cincinnati Reds out in an expanded playoff. That is as embarrassing as it gets for a team that is embarrassing themselves for years. Since its inception, it became accepted. It's like the rare time that they actually made the playoffs. Wow, congrats, the Mets have made the playoffs. We've talked about it a million times. They've made the playoffs consecutive years in their history. Twice. This is supposed to be a layup. So much so that even if they made the playoffs, I wouldn't have been happy. Just making the, even last year, I said the same thing. Well, if they make it, who cares? Now they went on a little bit of a run, so that overlooked a lot of the other real issues here. This, to me, would have been unacceptable even if they got in as a 6 seed. Unacceptable! How does this happen? How the hell does this team, with that payroll and that talent, lose out on a tiebreaker with 83 wins in the 6th seed in the National League to the Cincinnati Reds? I don't understand.
The easy answer is the pitching. That's too easy, and I don't think that that's the only answer. I think it's the core, which you've talked about for a while. Last year's team was defined by character and clutchness, if you really think about that, right? Pete's clutch home run, Lindor against Atlanta, the character throughout, the chemistry. This year, it really seemed to be the exact opposite. They weren't clutch, and the average and the stats with runners in scoring position, all the things we've thought, the inability to kind of, they were 0-67 entering the last inning with a deficit, so they were the absolute opposite of being clutch. And to me, every time their character was really tested, they failed. And, like, not only did this to me is the most unforgivable aspect of this Mets implosion, collapse, disintegration, whatever the word we're going to use is, right? They didn't seem to resist it with, like, the vigor and the fight and the character and the respect for their jobs that I think we all thought that they had. Now, I'm not saying that they wanted to lose. I don't believe that at all. I think if you believe that, I think you're an idiot. They did not want to lose. But their desire to win, their desire to forge through and fight through any impediment that came their way, it was non-existent. And when you see that, I've got to look at the leader, whether it's the so-called captain, whether it's the goofy first baseman, whether it's the amazing right fielder who didn't seem to really care if they won or lost, whether it's the manager who told us the same damn thing after every single loss. We're too talented. We've got talent. We got to figure this out. We should be better. You're not. And you weren't. And to me, it's not just baseball stuff. This Mets team, this is a bigger issue, I grant you that. This team, if I had a wrecking ball, I would take it and I would smash this piece into 100 pieces and start over outside of Soto, McLean, maybe one or two other pieces. It is time to switch it all up. They're not good enough, and if they stay together, they're never going to be good enough.
But BT, if they were to get in, they would have been dangerous.
Yeah, well,
nobody wants to play the Mets. Yeah. Nobody wants to play you. Hey, Brandon, you're right. Nobody wants to play you. Now nobody has to. Nobody has to. You're home. You guys embarrass yourself. I mean, that is as embarrassing as you. Bad seasons happen. Underperformance happens. Injuries happen. Dude, we had a similar conversation, you and I, when we first put together in 2023. Whereas in 2022, the Mets collapsed. That to me was, maybe the collapse is a little strong, but they blew that division. That division was there for the taking. No difference question. Is Braves came and got them. But I had an issue with that core after they got beat, when they got swept by Atlanta, and then got embarrassed, you know, went feebly in the postseason.
Padres.
Then they washed it down with a year that they didn't make the postseason, which I was stunned. Maybe I shouldn't have been, but I was surprised at that point. For a couple of reasons, like the payroll, the expanded postseason, like there really shouldn't be an excuse for missing the postseason when you spend as much as the New York Mets. But it doesn't mean that spending equals wins. Clearly it doesn't. But to make the postseason, that's not, like, that's bare minimum. They didn't. Then they followed up with a very good 2024 season. Okay, even if the first half of the season looked awful, they still followed up and we know the results. And now this. So to me, I think they're more of the bad that we've seen from 2022 throughout than they are the good. The one run that they went on last year, the miraculous run, that's the outlier. So I don't disagree. And now I was saying this for years, like, break up the core. It's been different guys over the course of this. But then when they started to have success, I'm like, you know what? I can't fight it anymore. Mm-hmm. They were great last year. You have to give them the benefit of the doubt. They started out this season. They were. They didn't just start out like the best team in baseball. They were the best team in baseball on that June 13th or whatever that day. They were the best team in baseball. And to fall apart like this, like, that's why I use the word embarrassing. They won 83 games, so it's not the worst team in franchise history. Their main four guys put up big numbers, so it's not like all of them underperformed or disastrous contracts. But as a team, they should be ashamed of themselves. And as a fan, to me, it's maybe not the most painful, but certainly the most embarrassing.
But I think, now again, I'm not a Mets fan, so I can't really speak to the pain. I can just speak to the situation. But, you know, try to just juxtapose the emotions. If it were my team, I almost feel that it would be the most painful because it was so painfully drawn out.
Well, it was a horrible season.
It was drawn out. Yeah. I mean, it was week upon week upon week upon week of bullpen implosion, kicking the ball around, which suddenly crept up the final couple of weeks of the season, and it was death by a little teeny, tiny million slices, which is a tough way to go down.
What I think painful, and maybe it's just because I was more in the prime of my fandom in 2007, like 2007, I was shocked. Like, that would be the word I would use, shocked. Like, there's no way this is actually going to happen, and then it did happen. I was like, what? Like, what was that? And then you're on the outside looking in, and you also got beat by a good Phillies team. A team that eventually would go on, you know, to be the world champions a couple of years later, whatever it may be. 2008, sitting in Shea Stadium on that Sunday, watching them come out and celebrate the say goodbye to Shea after they just got eliminated. Like, that to me was painful. Maybe it was because I jumped off ship. Maybe it's because I accepted what I believed to be their reality. Maybe it was because it was going on for so long. I don't know what the... It's just embarrassing. With the expanded postseason to miss the playoffs, like... And there are no clear answers. At least the other part you could say, well, in 2008, maybe they didn't have enough. And maybe that's just the case with this team. They're just not good enough, simply put. I don't understand, though, how you could play like the best team in baseball for 2 months or 2.5 months and then fall apart to the point where you get caught by the Reds. You can't even win 84 ballgames.
I don't have that answer. All we could give you is the thoughts, and obviously people are revved up. And Mets fans, beside yourself, we'll get the calls. Obviously, we'll get the Dart later. Yeah. Of course, we'll get to it all, BT and Sal. But I feel like, and I
the
can't,
Giants got to be upset today. Like the Mets,
the New York Giants, well, they taking away the steam.
If the Mets made the, if the Mets won yesterday, we'd be leading today with the Giants.
We would be.
We wouldn't be leading with the Mets, or the Yankees would be the Giants. So the fact that the Mets are so bad, they got in the way of a rare good day for the Giants, got to be annoying to the Giants.
That is true. But I'll tell you this, and I feel like, and it's a small sample, whether it's some of my friends or people on social media, which I really don't dive into much after games, a little bit, but just not much. That's not my thing. You know that. I feel like the, in a, like overall in totality, I feel like the Met fan has grown. This is a strong word that I haven't used in a long time to explain a fan base team relationship. I feel like the Met fan has grown to despise this group. I feel like the Met fan can't stand what this group emitted and how they took it laying down. And it's one thing to lose and collapse and have it hurt from a baseball perspective. I honestly feel like most of the Met fans hate this group of players.
Interesting way to put it, because last year, no question, it was a team that the fans can get behind and be proud of, even if they weren't the most talented. This team, obviously, the exact opposite of that. All right, let's hear from you guys. BT and Sal on the Fan. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires. From Connecticut to Maine, nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. 888-808-1019. Nick is in St. Augustine, Florida, starting us off. What's up, Nick?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, Sal, I called about a month ago. I was down on the Mets big time. You were still on board with them. Even when they played well in the beginning of the season, I felt like it was a 500 team. They were barely winning games. They weren't hitting. They weren't hitting in the clutch. BT, you're absolutely right. I despised this team almost the whole year. Sal, even you weren't happy with Soto in the beginning, but you knew it wasn't a team that was playing well. And it starts from the top. I know they're not getting rid of Stearns. And even some of the moves that he made at deadline I thought were good. They got to get rid of Mendoza. He is a horrible manager. Obviously, he can't get the guys going. He's not a tactician. He doesn't know really what he's doing out there. They got to take a wrecking ball, but the wrecking ball better swing from the top down. And you know it's got to start with Mendoza. That's it. This team has been embarrassing all year.
Let me ask something. When you say top down, like who do you think is the biggest culprit for this year's failures?
Honestly, this is the biggest culprit. Mendoza and the bottom half of the lineup. You go five down.
I would disagree. Sorry, Nick. Thank you for going. We appreciate
it. He's missing the big mark.
Yeah. It's David Stearns. Yes. It's a layup. And they're not going to fire Stearns. Going into year three.
Nor are they going to fire Mendoza. Martino had the report last night. He's coming back. Did you have to tell the Met fan 13 minutes after the game he's going to be back?
I know.
I mean, what do we do? That was a little quick. I'm not saying that I'd let him twist in the wind for 3 weeks, but, I mean, I've been very critical of Mendoza this year. I'm not saying that I would fire him.
Right.
But, I mean, he could wait 3 hours to see if it's what his fate is. He at least earned that.
And David Stearns is going to speak today. And Martino also in that report said that basically you could expect significant several coaching staff changes, which there should be, like, at the very least. Now, I don't think Mendoza should be fired. I thought he was great last year. I didn't think he was very good this year. And I understand that when you have a season like this to this Mendoza would say it himself. When you underperform to this level.
He did say it. He took it. He took it like a big man. He did, big boy.
Okay. Does that mean you got to be rash, make rash decisions and fire him? No, just like I wouldn't fire Stearns. I think Stearns is much more responsible for the. To me, it's Stearns and the players, all of them. Not the bottom half of the order, not the starting row, all of them. Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Nimmo, all of them. All of them. Stearns and the team that he put together, the big-time players, I don't care what their numbers say, the team wasn't good enough. Those are more, to me, bigger culprits than the manager.
I agree with that. And again, you know, you like Mendoza more than I do, but I would even agree with that assertion. I think that that's fair. I would bring him back for year three. Year one was good. Year two was bad. Year three splits the difference. Well, if year three is bad, you got it. And if year three is not good enough early, I would get rid of him mid-season. Doesn't have a whole rope next year.
Bingo. So that's enough, because think about it this way. If the Mets played well before they even got to the... Like, there was a chance that they could extend Carlos Mendoza.
Yeah.
And he would have been easy-peasy street. Like, oh, he's going to be here. The manager's not the issue.
Mm-hmm.
This season went so sideways and so bad that now all of a sudden...
Yeah,
he may not be fired now.
I know.
He's going to be in the direct line of fire.
Listen, you get to... When it reaches this level, it does change sensibility. It should. No matter what you thought prior to the last 6-7 weeks and... Even if you thought Mendoza had a couple of spotty moments, whether it's the Marte pinch running, pulling guys early, keep him out, with the baseball things that we talked about, nobody thought, really, at the middle of the season, that Mendoza should be fired. But it got so bad, and almost an element of, I don't want to say toxicity, but it just seemed so off that I think everything's in play next year. The one thing that I would disagree with Nick's call, real fast, Sal, is I was kind of buying the early success, because I'm sitting there saying, hold on, the Mets are winning all these games, and Juan Soto hasn't done a damn thing yet. So the easy thing for anybody would be like, unless you're just a hater or a troll, we all knew that Soto would eventually, I don't know if we thought he'd go almost 40-40, but we knew he'd wake up and basically remember that he was Juan Soto, and we all thought, well, when that happens, then the Mets, who are already very good at that point, would be even better. I don't know what the hell happened.
Also, there is a difference between saying, well, the Mets are going to be good to the level of being the best team in baseball or a World Series winning team versus the Mets are going to make the playoffs. Like, even when I was saying they're going to make the playoffs, it was less about them being great or my belief in them being great. It was like, dude, do you know how bad you have to be to miss the postseason? Think about how bad it is.
Yeah.
The Reds got in on a tiebreaker with 83 wins. Like, that's embarrassingly bad.
The Marlins were still mathematically alive a week ago. Think about that.
Oh, man, my God. So there's two different levels. Larry's in Westchester. What's up, Larry?
Hey, Larry.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
What's good up, man?
Listen, I need a couple of seconds to explain a couple of things. I agree with Sal, which is unusual because we're both Mets fans, but we don't agree all the time. But it has to start from the top down. Stearns is the architect of this. I remember when Cohen bought the team, he said he wanted to model the team after the Dodgers. Consistency. How do you hire Stearns and let him keep getting one-year pitches year after year? Is that a way to be consistent? And all these guys are off of the junk heap to boot. It finally caught up with them. Mendoza, I'm sorry, Sal, he's got to go. He's no manager. And as far as the players go, McNeil, Alonso already said he wanted to opt out. We're going to go through this every year. I'd say, Pete, I love you, but goodbye and good luck. If you think you can get 4 or 5 years of $30 million or more, go ahead and get it. It's a capitalist society. You're entitled. And Nimmo, I don't care. He's not consistent enough. I think, again, BT, what you said about getting a wrecking ball, it has to be done. But Stearns is the culprit with this. I don't know where he came up with, you don't need ace pitchers. That's why the Yankees keep winning. They got Freed. They got Rodon. Imagine if Cole was healthy this year, what they would
have
done.
The Yankees have a lot more than that, though, Larry, and thank you for the call. It's not just about one starting pitcher or two. Like, you could... My philosophy still would be similar in that I would not invest big, BT, high money. It doesn't mean just a blanket statement, never. Like, there are certain guys. We talked about it. Freed would have been the one guy that I thought was worthy of a big investment in the starting rotation. For the Mets, you couldn't ask them to do that this year on top of Juan Soto. So they'll go out there and address, but there's no way they would do the same thing again this year. But I don't think Stearns all of a sudden is going to change his entire philosophy and just go throw out $200 million contracts for free agent starting pitchers.
I don't think he's going to change necessarily the DNA of who he is. And I think that would be foolish because you hired him
right
based on how he operates. But if he's got to show growth here and the ability to adapt to the bigger market, and if he doesn't, well then, like Mendoza, if he doesn't get his act together, Stearns will be on the street as well. I don't agree with the term, and I forget the last call this day. Larry, good call, by the way. He used the term architect. To me, Brian Cashman's the architect of the Yankees. Stearns is not yet the architect of the Mets. Alonso didn't bring him in. McNeil didn't bring him in. Lindor didn't draft Beatty, didn't draft Alvarez, right, didn't bring Nimmo, didn't bring Marte, didn't bring in Diaz. So he's not the architect. That's an unfair...
And even Soto, like, I'm not saying he wouldn't want him, but...
Yeah, that's all Cohen. Yeah, Cohen's money stuff, yeah, of course. And Alex Cohen, the wife, the family thing. So to me, it's a really inaccurate representation of what Stearns has done. Now, moving forward, that's going to change. Now he's getting off the tarmac. He's going to get some altitude. It's going to be his flight. And he's got to show, again, the willingness to change and break some methods. It changes methodology a bit. And if he doesn't, then the Mets aren't going to win. He's got to get better, and the Mets have to change a lot.
We'll see what changes need to be made. I mean, we talked about it with Pete Alonso. I'm sure he'll be the biggest talking point in the offseason, at least initially, BT. He's going to elect to opt out, and we'll see what happens. I would bring Pete back, but I would tell him that you're going to be the bulk DH. There's no way anybody can tell me. He's not a good first baseman. End of story. So I don't want to hear it. I've said this for a while, for years. I don't want to hear anybody try to tell me otherwise. Well, he's great at scooping. Yeah, okay, that's nice. That's a part of being a good defensive first baseman. He is a butcher with his glove for the most part and an absolute embarrassment with his arm. With that being said, good luck finding somebody that plays every day like he does, that continues to produce to the high level of the power numbers that he does in New York.
Yep.
Like, those are givens that you're going to have to answer elsewhere. So I would bring Pete back, but tell him, here, what do you want? You want 4 years, what, 150, whatever like the number is that's in accordance to what the market says. Same thing as this year.
Mm-hmm.
Market might be increased, so be it. I'd be willing to do it, but I would say that of your 150-something games, you're going to play half of them at first and half of them as a DH, and when push comes to shove, crunch time, you're going to be as the DH. That's what I would do with Pete.
There was a point where, you know, I always just thought he was a butcher at first base, and then there was a point I'm like, all right, he's actually put some time in and he's made himself functional where... If the ball's at him, he's going to make the play. Ball's in the dirt, he's going to scoop it. He's awful at first base. I'm with you. I don't care what anybody says. He is a liability. You can't throw a three. You can't spin the 3-6-3 double play. When the infield's up and there's a play at the plate, you got to hope that it finds the catcher's mitt, not the backstop, not the dirt. His arm is a big issue. However, I really do think now, unlike last year, now Vlad's younger, as we know, and that's going to matter. Vlad's only 26 or 27, where Pete's going to be 31 next year. But Vlad got $500 million. Now, Vlad Guerrero this year, all right, hit 23 home runs and 84 RBIs.
Right.
Now, all right, he's a better first baseman. Who knows? Not much. Who knows how his body's going to evolve as he gets older and slower and probably thicker. He didn't hit 300, and his OPS was under 850.
Yeah, you talk about a bad contract. That is
horrible. Yeah. I'm with you.
We would have never done it. I wanted Vlad nowhere near. I didn't think he was getting that price.
Neither did I. I think that it's going to be more like a more fertile free agent ground, if you will, this offseason, because there's now at least a comp with Vlad Guerrero. And Pete has, at least for the moment, put together the whispers that he morphed into a 220 hitter, which was my greatest concern. Right. Like, when he was hitting 260, 270 early, I'm like, geez, if you're hitting 260 and you're banging 40-something home runs, even if you're okay at first base, you're a star. But when you hit 212 and 220 and there's a lot of strikeouts and the RBIs were in the 80s like they were a year ago, I'm like, that's a worrisome step back as you get older and as a right-handed fielding first baseman. I think that he re-energized his free agent pursuit, and I think he's going to get more than he was offered a year ago. I just think he is, and I think he's going to be on a different team.
If you were looking at it this way, and this is the way I'm choosing to look at it from a Mets perspective, I have no idea what they're going to do. But for me, if I'm investing money into either Nimmo, Lindor, Alonso, which of those three would you rather invest money in now and in the, you know, relatively near future?
It's easy. It's good for me. It's easy. I would say Pete.
Me too.
Because the reason, now Nimmo's easy. Yeah. Obviously, it would be Pete, then Lindor, then Nimmo in that order. Right. And the reason I would say Pete over Lindor is because even though he's going to age a little bit, you know, first base, you can live with that. Plus, there's a DH spot. Whereas, with, you know, I'm not saying Lindor couldn't play second base and be very good. But, you know, he had a rough defensive year, and he's only going to get younger and, you know, probably a little bit slower in the middle of the diamond.
Yeah. Also inconsistent. Like, the numbers may be consistent.
I know.
He's an inconsistent performer.
Yes, he is.
And he's getting paid a lot of money. And, by the way, there might be value there. Remember, it's not the 10-year deal that it once was. I think it's 6 years.
I forget.
Is it just under $200 million for Lindor? Because I was thinking about this the last couple weeks. This is bigger than just saying this at 12:30 in the middle of the show, but what I would do. I would trade Francisco Lindor because I think that's going to be a bigger return. I've already told you during the year I would have traded Nimmo, and I still would be up for that. If you could trade Nimmo and Lindor, I would do that, but I don't know if that's going to be possible. If you could get one, rid yourself of one. Now, while saying that, I know Lindor could be a productive player, and I know a lot of Mets fans love him. That's great. That's part of the appeal of trading him, is that you could get something back from him or at least get rid of that contract and then invest that money elsewhere. So I would, of those three, Nimmo, Lindor, Pete, I would trust Pete's power to produce more consistently than any of the other elements of the other players. And I would have that as a DH, split first baseman, split DH. Now you're set there with him and Soto as the tandem.
Mm-hmm.
The other two guys, I think, should be open for discussion to move on from both Nimmo and Lindor. Nimmo's the easy one. Just say, well, I want to move on from Nimmo. That's great. Where's the value on the open market? Even coming off a career year, he can't run. He's horrible defensively. He's inconsistent as well.
Yep.
So to me, the biggest return potentially, or biggest trading block would of those three, would be Lindor. And that changes the entire dynamics of the team. And maybe a team like Toronto is going to lose Bichette here in free agency. Maybe they go bite, and instead of trying to get a free agent to go there, they take on that contract of Lindor. You have what the numbers
are? I do. Yeah, I got you. So it's 34, 34, 34, 34, 34, 34.
All right, well, how many years
through,
is that?
Through 2031.
Say that again? 6 years times 34?
6 years left.
Right. Yeah.
He's going to be 37.
Yeah, so $200 million. Okay, so 6 years, $200 million. Like, that's not the. And by the way, the Mets could pay some of that down. Now the question is going to be: okay, well, would they value keeping Lindor here and rotting this out and trying to figure it out around it and not changing the quote? Like, for me, they need. It's not about the talent. We've seen what this talent can do, and we've seen all four of their core guys have career years to the point where I don't know how anybody in their right mind would bet that this exact situation is going to happen again next year. Not that Soto couldn't have that year, or Lindor or Nimmo couldn't have that year, or Alonso, but all together, all four, for the most part, staying healthy and producing at a high clip, and it didn't work. Yeah. So that goes to show, like, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. That's definitive. It did not work.
I don't like the core. I don't. You said this 2 years ago. You're right.
Well, remember, the core then was different because it was
without Soto.
Correct.
No, I got it.
So now he's the focal point of it. And by the way, there may come a day where he proves to be the problem. Like, statistically, he's not the problem.
Yeah.
But there are other issues that it brings, whether it's the amount of money that he costs, whether it's his sloppy defense, maybe his attitude, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not knocking Soto, but he's not going anywhere, at least for the time being.
Yeah.
He's untradeable. He's not going anywhere. Nor would you want to do that, nor would I. They still needed Soto. To me, it's the right move. He's your star. Now, how are you best going to build a team around him? And I would look to do it with something that we always talk about, baseball players, guys who can catch.
That's why I gave you Bellinger.
I get it, but he's going to be a pricey one.
Yeah.
That's also been inconsistent offensively. I'm not saying I wouldn't take him.
Yep.
First of all, I don't think he's leaving the Yankees, and if they do let him go, they're fools. Like, he's the perfect Yankee.
Central casting.
But I want guys who can field and run. That's what I want to build around. You don't need all guys who can mesh. So my two stars would be Soto, Alonso, and then build a team of ball players around them.
Now, here's the other thing, too. Like, when usually when you want to have those, or when you do have those 3, 4, 5 exorbitant contracts, you want younger players to fill in the boxes, right? Do we really know, what Vientos is? We don't.
Yeah.
I like Beatty. I think Beatty's going to be a 25 home run, 80-something RBI, 250, 260 kind of hitter with a good arm who picks it at third. I think Brett Beatty's your third baseman moving forward. I like the kid a lot. I used to love him. Then I kind of gave up on him, to be fair. He could play. But do you really know anything about Acuna? Do you really know anything about Mauricio? He's still waving at curveballs, missing them by feet, by multiple feet. So I don't know about Gilbert or some of the kids on the farm. Who the heck knows?
Yeah, Jet Williams, Carson Banks. Those are going to be the two guys that could potentially be.
I don't know. But listen, when you have this kind of a situation, it almost feels in a way like the Randall Nick situation. And you and I actually differed on that because I wanted to move on. You wanted to keep him. I thought that, and I love Randall, but I just thought that the ceiling was a little bit obvious with him. I just feel like the Mets ceiling is kind of this with this nucleus. And it's not to say that they're not good players, but they just, here's the bottom line. They don't work together the way they need to work together. Not that they don't like each other. Not that they don't talk to each other. They don't complement each other as players and as teammates the way they need to. And if it's my team, I'm blowing it up.
Correct. It didn't work.
No. It didn't work.
Willie Randolph is an experienced manager. Carlos Beltran was about to be the Mets manager. If they need to make a change in the middle of May, those seem like pretty good options. Let's lead it off with Ari in Valley Cottage. What's up, Ari?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Tough day to be a Mets fan, but I always think about how it could be worse, and I could root for your other teams, Evan. So
I said that yesterday at the end of the Rico. I said, listen, at least if you root for the Giants and Knicks, there's a little bit more hope, specifically
right.
The Knicks.
And Ari, thank God the Jets didn't play, for Evan's sake.
I know.
He might have had a heart attack.
That would have killed me.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen tomorrow at 4 to see what Domingo has to say. But anyway, I love your recommendations for the coaching changes. I totally agree with you. Something has to change there. This season can be put into, a tale of two seasons, before and after June 13th. Before that, our starting pitching and relief pitching was number one. And after that, we were, I think, 27th in the league, and our record shows for that. Looking down our offense, Pete Alonso and Juan Soto could have had the top, two of the top 10 best seasons as a Met, in the franchise. But how, with those two statistical records, the team couldn't hit with scoring position and get into the playoffs is beyond me. And kind of what happened yesterday with Pete makes me think that there's something going on in the locker room. Comparing
What do you mean what he said? How he described opting out?
I think just immediately opting out in the post-game interview, we all knew he was. But the way he said it and how quickly he said it, it's like he couldn't wait to get that off his chest.
Yeah, but let's...
Edwin Diaz did.
Yeah. Edwin, you're right. Edwin handled it better.
Edwin said, I will talk to my family.
Right, and then we'll make a decision. He's basically kicking it down the line so when it's not a hot story. Just as you should. You're just knocked out of the playoffs. People are hot-headed already. I think the difference with Pete, and you have to have had conversations with Pete and understand Pete's mind to get why he announced it. He was asked the question.
What's he supposed to do?
Exactly. And Pete's not going to wordsmith you to get around it. He's just going to answer.
Well, I think of...
He's straightforward that way.
I think of two other people who, when their season just ended, was asked the same question and was very blunt about their future. And those two guys are Gerrit Cole, mm-hmm. who ended up signing with the Yankees,
right.
and Juan Soto, who ended up signing with the Mets. Now, what does Alonso, Cole, and Soto all have in common? Does anybody want to guess? You want to guess? You want to guess, Sean? Raise your hand.
Highest paid at their position?
No.
Scott Boras is their agent?
Bing, bing, bang.
Wow, yes, that's
Scott
right.
Scott Boras.
The man who shall not be named.
Scott Boras is ruthless. And I think that Pete Alonso was told, if you are asked, you make it very clear. Right. And he's not saying it to intimidate me
right.
or intimidate Met fans. He's saying it to send a message to the owner.
We're not in contract hibernation.
And the man from Milwaukee. He wants to get paid.
Right.
And the Alonso thing is going to be talked about a lot. It is so simple. It is so freaking simple, yet so complicated. He wants to get paid. He felt like last year, the negotiations, not just from the Mets, but everyone else, was unfair to him. He wants to get paid.
Part of that was his agent's fault.
It doesn't matter.
Be fair.
Batique, it doesn't matter who's right or wrong.
I agree.
Here's what he thinks.
This is, of course.
And that's why he's just going to tell you, yeah, I'm opting out.
He also has to realize part of it was his agent's fault.
Yeah.
But that is what it is.
A part of it was Alonso having a bad year's fault. A part of it was having the pick attachment. Like, there were a lot of things that led to it.
Yeah.
But the guy wants to get paid. And what I would advise every Met fan to do is don't read too much into him saying, yeah.
Because that's just him answering the question.
It's a Borussian way of answering the question.
All right.
Let's go to Zach in Paramus. Hey, Zach.
What's going on, Evan? Tiki, what's going on today?
All's good. What's up, dude?
What's up?
All offseason, we heard from Met fans. We took Soto from you. We heard Tommy call us little brother. We heard everything all from December. But every year, Evan, we all need to come back to reality. It's just the same. Oh, Mets.
I have to take it. And there's no response.
Bunch of bitches.
There's no response until the Mets can offer a response.
Yes.
There's no response until the Mets do something to change this. This is who they are. This is who we are. And Met fans, get used to it. I had a talk with my son as he went to school today. He's like, what do I say to Yankee fans? I said, there's nothing you can say.
Mets suck.
There's nothing you can say. Own it. We do suck. We did choke. We did talk a lot of trash. And with talking trash comes with getting punched in the face. I wasn't mad at Sean for going on Twitter last night with all his drafts that he had written for the last 2 months. Hmm. Let me make fun of the Bronx race at Citi Field. You and Keith did the same thing. What, do you share a brain?
I mean, it was easy to tell. I mean, you couldn't have that draft win one race, or
yeah, I could
have
just won one. Just one?
Let's go to Mike in Brooklyn. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
All's good.
I love you guys, but I got to disagree here. I think Mendy 10,000,000% has to go, and I'm going to tell you why.
Go.
Okay? All right. He walked in to what was a ready-to-go team, which is the first mistake by the owner, because he put the general manager in charge of getting someone else for a ready-to-go team when he already had a ready-to-go manager, but that's a different story. Mendy, people forget, this team was horrific all the way until what? Let's be realistic. Let's say July, until Lindor woke up and Lindor carried that team. They won in spite of Mendoza's horrible move.
I can't say that. I think you're wrong about last year. And it's easy to do this when we're pissed off. We kind of imagine what a previous season was.
Yeah.
That's like me. I've been so tough on Brian Daboll. I've been so tough on him. That would be like me saying to Tiki, you know, 2022, they won despite him. Like, no, that's not true.
No.
Like, you can rip Mendoza just like I can rip Daboll, while also acknowledging that their first year was awesome.
Of course it was. I mean, it probably set them back because they tried to win now with a flawed roster. But, I mean, we can get into it later. But it almost feels like you want to give a guy credit, understanding that he did it in spite of the circumstances. And then when those circumstances come back to bite you, in the case of the Mets, it's, your rotation actually wasn't that solid. They just outperformed themselves early in the season. The stars on this team just went through massive individual slumps at the wrong times and couldn't hit with runners in scoring positions when all you needed to win was one or two of those games in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
One of those 162s, and you're not having this problem against the Reds. So, the circumstances catch up to you and hit you in different ways. In one case, it makes you feel really good about the leader of the team. In another case, it makes you hate him.
I also believe that when you fire a manager who's had success, there needs to be a few things you do before you do it. So I'll go back into Met history, and now Tiki can't lecture me. History doesn't matter, considering this Met team repeated history. So history means everything. Before the Mets fired Bobby Valentine, they took all his coaches away.
Yeah.
Before they fired him, they cut his you-know-whats off. That's what I would do. What I would do right now is I'm changing the coaching staff. I'm making changes with an eye on if this doesn't turn around, I got no issue making a managerial change in the middle of 26. Bobby and Mattawan. Hey, Bobby.
What's going on, guys?
What's up?
You know, I would say one thing to the Mendy thing. That one game when, I don't know, they needed a run and they had, I don't know if it was Alvarez, somebody hit that double. And I'm on my couch and I'm saying, put in a pinch runner, put in a pinch runner. And he didn't do it. And that was the one, you know, the one thing where
Bobby,
you say he really messed up.
Bobby, there's a lot of that. And I'm telling you right now, for your own mental sake, if we do this with every game the Mets lost this year, you're going to lose your mind. There are a ton of games where if this is different, if that is different, if he does this, if I do that, the whole season's different. You can't do it over 162.
No, there's too many moments, too many games that were lost because of whatever, anybody's decision or somebody's lack of performance.
You know, I've said a lot of things about the Mets. You've said a lot of things about the Mets. I want to play you guys something that maybe you didn't hear because you were so disgusted by the end of the Met game, and that is the great Gary Cohen. Last night, or yesterday, late afternoon, as the Mets were losing the game on the Francisco Lindor double play, we already knew the Reds lost. Gary Cohen, who I think is so good when he wants to be. When he wants to be honest, he's the best. Like last year, when Lindor hit the home run and the Mets get one game 161, how eloquent and accurate was he when he said from 0-5 to OMG? I want every single person to listen to Francisco Lindor's double play and Gary Cohen's calls describing the end of the Mets season, and I ask you to spot the lie. It could not be described more accurately than Gary Cohen.
And the Mets agonizing 3.5 month slow motion collapse is complete.
Slow motion collapse is complete. He lets the crowd cheer for 9-10 seconds, and then he adds this.
It is unfathomable that this collection of talent winds up outside of an expanded playoff system. After having the best record in baseball for the first 2.5 months of the season, everything goes wrong over the last 3.5 months, and the Mets find themselves on the outside looking in.
Thank you for accurately describing it. Unfathomable. In a Manfred blown-up playoff system, it is unexplainable that a collection of high-priced talent could have that happen. Thank you, Gary Cohen.
Yes, he's absolutely right as well, because it doesn't make any sense.
None. It was the Mets missing the playoffs. I just wanted to get that off my chest.
No, you're right about that. The Mets had every opportunity, and they were given to it by the Reds. I mean, everybody was playing at the same time, so it was hard to see a causation there. But in real time, as you watched it, and the Reds ran out to a lead, and the Brewers had zero to play for. They were already locked in with the best record. Even if they end up tied with the Phillies, they have the tiebreaker. They had nothing to play for.
The Cincinnati Reds had three games against the Pirates at home, and they lost 2 out of 3.
Mm-hmm.
They had three games against the Brewers, who had nothing to play for, especially by the end, and they only won 2 out of 3. So quite frankly, we blew it. You didn't earn it. Now, with all that said, go Reds. I'd love to see you beat the Dodgers. I'd have no bitterness towards you. Now, David Stearns is meeting his makers right now. He is meeting the media. Let us go very much live to the Man from Milwaukee desk that we've created here in the Evan and Tukey studios to kind of find out what David Stearns has had to say so far. Sean, where should we start?
I think we should start on the future of the manager of the New York Mets.
Let's hear it.
Are you prepared to say that Carlos will definitely be the manager next year?
Yeah, Carlos is coming back next year.
So that has been put to rest.
Quick and easy.
Well, there's a follow-up to that now.
As we speculated.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Carlos Mendoza the right person going forward?
Yeah, I believe Carlos has all the same traits and assets that I believed in when we hired him 2 years ago. And I think over the course of his tenure here, he has demonstrated that. We had a tough year this year. There's no question. We are all disappointed. We are all frustrated. Mendy as much or more than anyone else. But I still believe he's a very good manager, and I think he's going to demonstrate that.
I know there are a lot of Met fans that don't want to hear that, especially hours after the season ended and hours after Carlos Mendoza authored one of the worst managed games you'll ever see by being in a rush to pull Sean Manaea. But overall, I do agree with the man from Milwaukee. Carlos Mendoza's first year here has earned him that second chance after massive failure in year two. Now, what David Stearns needs to address and what is very important to me is what he's going to do to that coaching staff. And he'll never admit this, nor should he, but how hot that seat's going to be for Mendy next year, because quite frankly, it should be very hot.
Yes. No audio on this because it's very quick. They're going to evaluate over the course of the next week to 10 days on the future of the coaching staff under Mendy. But the next part of this is David Stearns, and we'll play these two clips in a row, has put a lot of the Met problems on their pitching staff.
I think holistically, as I look at our pitching staff, we needed to do more over the course of the season. That is very clear. What we were faced at the deadline, I think our fan base would actually be perhaps even more upset if we had made some of those moves. But the entirety of our run prevention unit was not good enough this year.
Mm. Entirety of our run prevention unit. Interesting way to say it.
It's the way these people speak. And by these people, I mean the geeks that run baseball.
Yeah.
Our run prevention unit is doing a great job.
And think about it. The ball's on me to call someone else a geek. Right. Well, guess what? He's geekier than I am.
Well, I get it because we obviously know what you're talking about. But what he's essentially saying is that there were no good options at the trade deadline. The options that we started the season with failed us.
Well, the counter to that is something Sean always says about Brian Cashman, and I think it applies better here with David. Then you didn't do a good enough job before the season.
True.
You signed Frankie Montas. I didn't sign Frankie Montas. The prior administration didn't sign Frankie Montas.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were adding pitchers and you could have signed, I don't know, Nick Pivetta or Jose Quintana or trade for Garrett Crochet, you signed Frankie Montas. So I get it, and I agree that the trade deadline did not pose a lot of great starting pitching options. Completely agree with that. Who was traded? And he's probably right. They asked for the moon if you tried to trade for Zach Gallen or whomever. But that goes back to the initial problem, man from Milwaukee. You signed David Stearns. We didn't. Okay? That's on you, bro.
Which is interesting because he was then asked what he thinks is going to be the easiest thing for him to fix about this Met team in the offseason.
Going forward, what do you see as the most fixable thing for this club?
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep harping on run prevention. Like that is where we fell short this year. It's where we need to get better. I think we will. I think that improvement can come both internally and externally. I very much believe in our player development apparatus. I believe we're developing very good pitchers. I think we're going to continue to do that, and that's going to continue to be an emphasis.
David, here's the issue, okay? The starting pitching sucked. We all know that, and you're preaching to what we already know,
right?
That run prevention wasn't good enough,
right?
Okay,
you hear what he was saying, though. He's talking about developing pitchers.
Yes.
He's talking about his farm system.
Absolutely, and they have a great farm system.
Right.
I mean, when you look at even the three kids we saw in Beyond, no question the Mets have a good staff, but he's missing a major, major issue. A major issue. That every time I bring up, people get like pissed at me for saying, because it's like, oh, it's not true. The New York Mets in 2025 scored two fewer runs than they scored last year. And that is off of adding Juan Soto.
Yeah.
And that is off of Pete Alonso, who God knows if the man from Milwaukee actually wants to pay, having a great season. You scored two fewer runs. So I mentioned earlier you got to have tough conversations, awkward conversations, difficult conversations. Have that conversation. Because if you are going to say, well, the Mets failed because of pitching, end of story, then you are not looking at the entire picture. Mm-hmm. You are not looking at the entire body because the offense wasn't good enough. They went to Miami and scored 7 runs in 3 games. It's not good enough. The Saturday and Sunday against the Nationals was not good enough. Now, it's complicated, Teak. I'll be the first to tell you because you look individually and you're like, Brandon Nimmo, Lindor, Soto, I don't get it. Figure it out. But don't tell me it's just the pitching. Once we fix it, we're good. Because you didn't score enough runs. You did not score enough runs, and you can't argue it because they didn't.
And it's exacerbated by 162, where you scored 0.
Yeah, well, look at the big games down the stretch.
Of course.
What'd they do on Friday night when they needed to win?
Right.
What'd they do?
Nothing.
Even on Saturday, they ended up scoring 5 runs. They had 3 until the 9th inning.
Mm-hmm.
What'd they do against Washington the final weekend of the year? And even the majority of the year, there were too many games in which the offense went to sleep. So if he thinks it's just pitching, he's mistaken. Now, pitching obviously was a huge issue. No one is disputing that.
Right.
And the other thing about relying on just young pitching is you're taking a leap of faith because you just don't know. You need some reliability in that rotation. And right now, who's the most reliable starter in the Met rotation?
Nolan McClain.
Well, that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
A kid who's made eight major league starts.
And then after that, I'd probably say Clay Holmes.
Okay, so a converted reliever who just had his first year as a starter.
I'm being honest.
You're not wrong, Teague. I'm not criticizing you. I'm telling you that's not great answers.
I mean, I hope that Kodai Senga figures out what the hell is wrong with him. And if, so for next year, you're not worried about, is he going to go three innings or is he going to pitch seven? And you have no idea with Kodai Senga. And he gave us nothing at the end of the year to think about for next year.
David Stearns has a major issue. And it's such a major issue that isn't major, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
His major issue is when he speaks to us and fans, because I know the way a lot of people think. I know what Beningo is going to think when he hears this guy speak. I know what a lot of people are going to think. They're going to think, no matter what he's saying, he is an arrogant, smarter-than-you geek.
Right.
And that's, by the way, not fair, but I can just hear it. There isn't emotion in his voice. And I don't care about it, I'm going to be honest with you, because I'm just listening to what he's saying. And, like, I disagree with not bringing up the offense. Like, I'll argue about it, but I'm telling you right now, the way he speaks is just going to piss off a lot of Met fans. I can just feel it in my bones right now.
Yeah, because he's matter-of-fact. He's not trying to sugarcoat anything. He's just matter-of-fact telling you what he thinks the answers are.
And, even
some of it is analytics, which we don't want to hear. Because as a fan or even someone just evaluating an BO, you kind of want the emotion, and he's giving to you flat.
No, he's just giving you, well, run prevention isn't good enough. Like, I don't care about it, but I'm telling you right now, Met fans are going to hear this and be like, oh my God, this guy. Mm. And the truth is, David Stearns has to take the blame for this.
What else can he do, though? No. I mean, all he can do is take the blame.
Well, he has to, because most of the Met failures is on the horrific moves that he made.
Okay, David Stearns was asked, he's mentioned a lot about the pitching. What about this offense and what about the core? Does he foresee anything other than Pete Alonso really changing about this team going
forward? All right,
let's
hear it.
David? Dave, aside from Pete Alonso's free agency, position-wise, you guys do have a lot of people coming back and the same core that you've had for a while. Do you anticipate making significant changes to that group? I know you talked about run prevention and some suboptimal positioning.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to be open-minded on our position player grouping so that we can improve our run prevention. You know, does that mean there are robust changes? I don't know. Does it mean people could be playing different positions? Maybe. Does it mean we ask people to play different roles? Maybe. You know, a day after a season ends, I'm certainly not going to commit to what things look like in spring training or opening day. But, our run prevention this year was not good enough. And that is both pitching and defense. They go hand in hand, and we need to improve them both.
On that same vein, do you think there's something about this particular mix of players that you have that just didn't, you know, you talk about, I know it's just one stat, but, you know, their inability to come back late, and that's, I know it's one stat, but you were the only team not to do it. Is there something about the way this team kind of played together during some of its more crucial times?
You know, it's a very natural question because of some of those types of stats that are out there. I can tell you my experience in the clubhouse throughout this year is we had guys who cared about each other, who cared about winning, who worked hard. It's very difficult for me to explain how we were 0-70 trailing going into the ninth. I mean, that's an inexplicable stat. And I'm not going to hear him make up an answer for it.
Well, at least he was honest with that one. 0-70.
Yes, and
0-70,
and he is only team not to make that comeback. He is also saying he doesn't put that on the mix of players, which he may be right about. Who knows about chemistry? Here's my problem with the answer: he did not address the lineup. He did not address that they didn't score enough runs. He said run prevention. Our defense wasn't good enough, which he's not wrong about.
Well, I mean,
they did a lot of things bad, including defense and pitching. But I'll say it again. They scored two fewer runs this year than they scored last year.
Right.
They got shut out in game 162. Their offense wasn't good enough. So here's the code of what David is saying. Pete Alonso is either gone or he's going to DH a lot. That's what David Stearns has told you.
Well, that's what he wants.
And what I would tell David Stearns is, I get it. I'm not even going to defend Pete's defense down the stretch. I won't. He wasn't good enough. But if you let him go because you want to improve your run prevention, explain to me how you're going to replace the run production.
Oh, because Schwarber, that's how you replace it. You even told me that a week ago.
Well, that doesn't mean that's what they would do.
Yeah, but there are options for run production. It's just the issue, and he's right about this, is the starting rotation. I mean, 5 innings? That'd be amazing. How about 6, 7? Right? What are we talking about? These guys can't get the 5 innings. And so his focus has to be somewhere. Obviously, he would love, I'm sure, to re-sign Pete Alonso. Who knows how much that's going to cost? He would love to if Edwin Diaz does opt out. He probably will. Who knows how much that's going to cost? But their starting pitching after a certain point, let's call it mid-July, was abysmal. Abysmal. And it was not trustworthy until you brought the kids up, and it was too late at that point. And only really one of them was elite as often as you needed them to be. So how are you possibly correcting this if, as he says, your run, whatever do you call it?
Run prevention.
Run prevention?
Yes.
Doesn't get better.
Yes.
He has to focus on something. If he's wrong about it, then he's wrong about it. But he's got to focus on something.
I am very curious what he's going to say about Kodai Senga, because I have surmised over the last 2 weeks that the Mets are done with him. That's what I've surmised based on the way Mendy talked about him, the way they wouldn't bring him back up, even after he had one good start in AAA. So I am fascinated to hear what David Stearns, the man from Milwaukee, has to say about Kodai Senga, because about a few days ago, I think I even tweeted, I think he's played his last game as a New York Met. Mm. Let's see if David Stearns offers us any hint on his thoughts on Kodai.
Look, Kodai's had two very inconsistent, challenging years in a row. We know it's in there. We know there's potential. We're going to do everything we can to help get it out of him. But no, can we put him in ink as making 30 starts next year? I think that would be foolish.
Oh, he's gone. I'm right.
Oh, my God. He's gone.
That was as blatant as you could make it.
They hate him.
Be in ink to make 30 starts? No, that's foolish. Go to minor leagues and stay down there.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.